What is up, everybody? Welcome into the Wednesday edition of Unpaved. He is Sean Salisbury. I am Adam Sager. Follow the show at Unpaved on Rumble, Sean at Sean Unfiltered, and myself at Adam G. Sager. Sean,
what's happening this morning, man? How you doing, brother?
Good, good. Had to take my daughter to the ortho. She got her braces off, so it's been a productive morning so far, but no football. You know, nothing big happened yesterday after our show football-wise. Great baseball game last night, at least a great pitching performance by Yamamoto of the Dodgers. And like we were talking before the show started, two road teams go into away venues and leave up 2-0, and the Dodgers over the Brewers and the Mariners over the Blue Jays. Starting to look like we know who's in this World Series coming up, and it's going to be two West Coast teams, which you never know how MLB feels about that with the times and everything. It's just so different. But I think the two best teams are right now leading their series, in my opinion.
Yeah, Sags, I don't disagree with you at all on this one. And, you know, I'm trying to remember, and I can't, and just off the top of my head, the last time two road AL NLCS in the AL in this championship series, the step before the World Series, went on the road and won two and was headed home.
Yeah,
I'm talking about we both did it at the same time.
Yeah,
and so I and then the truth of it, when you look at it, think where the Mariners had to come from, because the truth of the two best teams all year long were Toronto and Milwaukee in the when I say best, consistent. Regular, right? That withstood it, ups and downs, and then they kind of stayed the course, right? They were able to calm the sea no matter what. And then you talk about, you know, the lightning rod that is the Dodgers and all the money they spend, the reigning World Series champions, and just a phenomenal group of players, and have about seven guys in a lineup that can carry you for a while, and then the pitching staffs, and then the questions in bullpen with the Dodgers, and they got it right because they got the right guy at the back end. Like we had said a week and a half to 2 weeks ago, Segs, or maybe it was a week ago when he first went in there, yep, and they may have found him. And I'm talking about moving forward as well, Segs. And so when you take a look at how they both weathered it against a hell of a Milwaukee team and a hell of a Toronto team, but to go on the road and do that, well, while I know that it's not over till the series is over, you're going to have to do a hell of a lot to take care of your business and return the favor and try to even the series if you can. And it's 2-3-2 now, I think, the way we work it out, right, Segs, for the travel purposes. So you're going to try to steal two to give yourself a chance to get back to your building. But, the pitching, Dodgers starting pitching in the postseason has done a hell of a job. And then the Seattle Mariners, Segs, being in a, you know, and living in a city that has been dominated by the Astros in that division for a while now. Sands 2 years ago when the World Series was won by Boch's team in Texas. But, you know, winning divisions and constantly being in a chance to get to a World Series with three different managers and three different GMs. And then all the injuries this year, how could they overcome it? And remember, there was a point in time when the Mariners were, what, 7.5 to 8 out, Six, I think, maybe even pushing 9 games. And then they make a couple trades at the trade deadline to add power to their lineup. Their pitching going in was supposed to be the strength, and it has been. We knew that from top to bottom. And then they added the one element that they needed, and that was the ability to destroy you with the long ball. And they've done it. And, you know, they are really, really – they're going to be a tough out. It's obvious. And like I said, momentum, confidence – momentum's game-to-game for me, confidence series-to-series. I mean, in-game momentum, game-to-game confidence.
Yeah.
We don't have to worry about the Dodgers' confidence. And I think the Mariners have proven to themselves along the way, Segs, when they were greatly questioned. And not a lot of people see them on the West Coast during most of the season. They just don't. And to have them sitting in this position, the way they're playing, this is not a, oh, I can't believe it situation with the Mariners. They have done everything to earn this, play defense. The catcher is phenomenal. He's going to win the MVP, I think. At least, I mean, if you're talking about both sides, Segs, even though Judge plays good outfield, the demands on the catcher, and then to play it, again, no pass balls, which we've talked about, his ability to throw people out. It's been impressive to watch this, and it'll be – I'm sure both these like it because it'll be short trips, brother. It'll be short trips for the World Series while they still got work to do. Both of these teams will like that part of it. And Major League Baseball love the Dodgers. They'll be intrigued with the Mariners. I don't know how much they'll love having both West Coast teams, because you know the East Coast is going to shut it off when you get west of the Mississippi or east.
Oh, yeah.
So, but they don't care about that, because in truth, they're both playing quality enough baseball to go in and garner hoisting that trophy. It's been a fun watch, man. And last night, Yamamoto was outstanding. And the Dodgers know how to piece teams together, whether it's with money or not. Their scouting department gets players that you just, wow, this guy. And then their versatility to be able to put a guy like Kike Hernandez in the outfield, in the middle infield, third base, DH somebody. Max Muncy can play first, can play third. Betts has played damn near every outfield position, shortstop, second base. I mean, they're able to do, and then you got the fixtures like Freddie Freeman and Ohtani to do their thing. And in truth, Ohtani hasn't even opened up the can of whoop ass we're used to throughout the most of the postseason.
Right.
I'm talking about leading into this series. And I think Dave Roberts even said, we can't win a World Series without Ohtani picking it up. Right. And he knows that. So it's been a good to watch things. I don't know how much you saw Seattle during the regular season, even though you're a baseball nut. I know you watched a lot of it.
Yeah.
But don't you echo the sentiments of thinking New York and Philly are not, unless you're a diehard baseball guy or gal, you're probably not going to be too tuned in. You and I are diehards. I'm watching the World Series no matter who plays. But there are some that are going to tune out. But like I said, I don't think the Mariners and Dodgers give a rat's ass about that.
Yeah, and I mean, just going back to this NLCS, just these two games, the fact that the Brewers have two runs on five hits, Blake Snell and Yamamoto have just been brilliant. The Dodgers' offense has nine extra base hits, so they have four more extra base hits than the Brewers do hits completely in this.
Which is a bit shocking, thanks to me, you two.
Yeah, I mean, Jackson Chourio hits the home run last night, and the 21-year-old kind of seems like he's been their offense in this postseason. I know Andrew Vaughn's hit a couple home runs, and you know, that drives me nuts. Andrew Vaughn being a former White Sox who was, I'm not kidding when I say Andrew Vaughn was the worst player in baseball in Chicago during his time. There's not a lot of people will argue that he was the worst just overall hitter, first base.
Analytics kind of pointed it out, didn't they?
Just say? a bad baseball player. And that's where it's crazy. Some of these just change of scenery. It helps guys so much. And then he went to Milwaukee, played in the minors a few weeks, came up, and has just been on a tear. And he hit a couple big home runs against the Cubs. But, yeah, this Brewers offense has just gone lifeless against
and it can't.
Blake Snell.
You can't, especially when the other team, you know that they're still waiting for another bust out. You know, we know what they bring to the table. I love the Brewers team. I love the manager. I love them. But you just can't go wrong time to go cold. It just is. It's pretty – And it's evident as hell, Sage, you're 100% correct. And I just, you know, getting to that game and Blake Snell, you know, we talk about Skubal, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. We talk about Crochet with two guys that were dominant in the postseason, were outstanding. I think Blake Snell sent in a loud message. Don't forget this left-hander.
Yeah.
I got a couple Cy Youngs to prove it. And also, I'm still pumping it at 97, 98. I can get up to 99, even 100 if necessary. And then he's got, you know, a couple other wicked pitches, and he is applying it. And there's a postseason moxie about him that he's seen it enough from Tampa and all the way through, Sage. This feels like home for him. Now, I'm not even talking about the Dodgers. I'm talking about firmly planting his ass in postseason baseball and saying, you know, you got stuff to do. And then you couple that with Yamamoto's performance and what they're going to get now at the back end of the bullpen. The Brewers resilient, but it's going to be a real difficult task. And they made it more difficult by bats going cold in this series.
And it's not like you can be like, oh, Brewers, okay, you got through Snell. You got through Yamamoto. Now you can kind of take – no, here's Shohei Ohtani starting game three for you. So, I mean, who's able to go out and do exactly what Blake Snell, do exactly what Yamamoto did. And it's just it's tough. And
you get to play at their best, Georgia, Alabama, and LSU during their national title. You're back to back to back and think it's going to, by the time you get to the third one, you're so damn exhausted. It's like, and the third one, in truth, if he was just doing this and fully right and worked and it stretched out and he might be better than all of them. That's the crazy thing about it. So,
and I know, you know, Isaiah says here, Blake Snell's salary this year is more than all the Brewers pitching combined. That there's levels to this, yes, but this is baseball.
Still got
this
pitch.
Is how it's always been. This is the Dodgers are going to spend. If you want to win a World Series at some point in the NL, you're going to have to beat the Dodgers most of the time. So,
and Snakes, we also see this movie with Tampa in the past, you know, when they were flirting with the World Series and that part constantly at the top. We see it in Kansas City, and they were able to pull through one of those where you almost have to have an out-of-body experience because and have guys have career years and postseasons to get there because there's the haves and the have-nots. It's always going to be that way. There are the markets, and that's why it's even a bigger tribute to teams like Milwaukee, teams like Kansas City, those teams that the fact that they can hang around. Segs, and when I say hang around, be competitive and push for a chance to win, and in some cases win one, considering that three people on the Dodgers payroll will be making more than damn near the whole payroll of the Milwaukee Brewers. But you are exactly right. This is the way it is. Certain you're going to go through the Yankees most of the time. You're going to have to get through teams like that. You're going to have to get through Philly, through the Dodgers. It just works. Every now and again, a small market team will do it. But you know what you're up against going in, Segs.
Right.
And that's just – and when people say they're buying a title, yeah. And guess who else is buying a title? NIL now. It's running rampant through all sports. So if you can't beat them, you either got to join them or find a way to get guys who overachieve and have career years, and it ain't about the money. But it's always about the money when it comes to trying to win a title. It just is.
Well, and if you go and find Jeff Passan on X – and you look through his stories, he's got a story that kind of says this NLCS might really hang up the next CBA battle that they have coming up here in 2027. You know, there's already talk that there could be a lockout. There's already talk that we may not have baseball at all in 2027 if the players union decides that we are going to stand firm, because you know the owners are coming for spending on players. You know they're coming for all these certain things.
They're coming for sales, salary cap, Segs. They're coming for that.
And we know that I don't think will ever pass. I mean, if
the players will never show up for that.
Players, yes, really care about themselves right now and the future players of MLB, it'll never pass. And it's something that, you know, if you wanted it done, it should have been done a long time ago. But with the salaries where they are now, why would the players ever say yes?
Segs. To that? Yeah, it was like this. Pretend this is even though it's one of my golf markers, right? Pretend this is that PGA Fields Ranch where you and I got to play, where the PGA of America is in Frisco, Texas now, Segs. When you come out here, we got to go play here. But it's a ball. It's a ball marker.
Mm-hmm.
And pretend this is a 9-carat, 12-carat diamond ring, and you go look at it.
Yeah,
and your gal sees it. Well, I'm not just saying, or you know, you see it, or the guy's excited for it too. It says, "Oh yeah, let's pick that. Can we look at that? Sure." Well, 8 security guys have a 9mm aimed at your head, so you don't steal it.
Right.
And then you put it down, and she's giddy. And the next day you come back, and then you get this, Eggs, which is a lollipop from Tums. That's a cubic zirconia. It's a lot less expensive. It kind of looks, you know, size wise, feels like it's big. And then you say, well, honey, what do you think about this? And even you're looking at the sales person, can I pull this?
Yeah.
NFL bargaining, I mean, collective bargaining chip. You think they're going from 12-carat diamond ring, the players, to cubic zirconia sand? Because you know what? As much as we, you know, and there may be a work stoppage and all that, because I'm prepared for it. I actually think there is going to be because of the battle. And when money's involved in big money like this, but in truth, do you go to watch the general manager or the owner and is sitting in his suite? No, you go to watch the player. So in truth, and what it is there, the only thing the players are going to have to guard for, Segs, is the younger cats who don't have the money sitting away that the long-term players have. They're making 25, 20, 15 million a year. Now you say, well, if they're making a million a year, you shouldn't have to worry about them. But it's sports. Money gets spent. Taxes kick in.
Right.
But the point is, how long can you withstand this? Because – billionaires' money, that's their advantage. They're billionaires. They can withstand you a long time. But if you're going to give in, there'd be a lot of other things to give in on, because once you give that back to the owners, you are hosed, brother. Mm-hmm. You ain't ever getting free. Basically, this free enterprise system in baseball is what it is, because the players don't care if you go over the threshold of the tax threshold right now. The owners do. The players do care if you put a salary cap on them, say, man, I'm worth this, but I'm getting this. That's not happening. So they've got to know in those meetings, and I've been in those NFL-wise segs where you go in and guys are bantering back and forth. What are you willing to give? And there's going to be a different thought for the second year guy's exit. Even if he has got like a guy like Pete Crow Armstrong, right? Mm-hmm. Who's got a $40 million a year or more future, it would seem, right? But he's not there yet. He's making, according to baseball standards, like chump change right yeah. now, right? And you look at that and you're thinking, well, how is he going to be thinking? Because he gets a say in it too, just like all the players do in a vote in it. So where's it going to be? Are you willing to withstand that knowing what the end game is? Because if you're Freddie Freeman or those guys, you're all of a sudden thinking, yeah, I want to make a legacy for the young guys, leave a legacy. But you're also thinking, I'm getting near the tail end of my career. Don't put a salary cap on the money I'm getting now. You know what I'm saying, Seg? So well, that CBA, it's tough. But the players, if they give that away, the billionaires can hold out longer, but we go to watch the players. So they do hold that card.
Well, and let me ask you this. As a former player, if you were a quarterback that was making, let's say, Patrick Mahomes money now, you know, or you're making a lot of money back in your day, $10 million, whatever it was, and a CBA comes up and it's like, all right, guys, we're gonna ride this one out. We're yep. going to sit out, but you're 34. You're Freddie Freeman. You've got a contract that's paying you $37 million this year. And now it's like, okay, now these guys that are 26, 27, 28 that are making close to what I'm making, they all want to sit out, but they also all have maybe 10 years left in baseball of making huge money if they right. do it right and sit out. Whereas if Freddie Freeman or whoever is at the end of their career taking a year off, you don't get paid. So it's kind of, I still want to make
yeah, guaranteed, money. Guaranteed. Yeah, you don't get guaranteed money when there's a work stoppage. All that guarantee right. goes
yeah,
away.
That you all
get
goes
when
away.
You cut, but right, Segs with that. And I figured you were probably going to go down that rabbit hole, and it's a good one. I'm just going to tell you, even if you're the nicest, best guy in the world that's made a lot of money, you're thinking, this is my last contract. This is my last 3-year go round. While I love the younger guy,
right.
Segs, the one thing I learned in NFLPA meetings with all the great guys and all the guys who wanted, you know what they don't think for the most part? They think in this money, my future, then let my future, my family, then legacy for the young guys. I'm just telling you, that's how
yeah,
they think.
Right.
And it's not a bad thing. I get it. But when I'm in there, the last thing guys are thinking about is the rookie making 750 grand. They're thinking about how much more can I gather in and get, even if you got a lot. When people say, when's enough enough? Well, for the person getting it, it's never enough. Right. It just never is. Like, whatever. They're rarely willing to sacrifice theirs to make sure the young guys 20 years from now, their grandkids' age, get theirs, right? When 20 years later. So, and it's not, I mean, well, you may think it's selfish, but that's the world we live in. The CEO yeah. ain't giving up money so you get money. He's still right. taking his friggin' bonus. It's the way it works. So that's the way it works. That's why we, you know, there is a pecking order in life. But with that, Sigs, so the older guys, regardless of what they tell you, and it could be a tremendous guy like Freddie Freeman, that may sacrifice a little bit. It's not going to cut into their bottom line. I'm just telling you.
Right.
Because they don't, and what else they don't think about, Sigs, is, well, insurance 15 years from now. Or they just don't. Oh, Cobra will last 3 years. You want to go check your Cobra out, how much that costs. That's a small fortune in its own self for people when their insurance runs out. Now, I'm one of those guys that thinks every player should have insurance the rest of their careers if they played 3 or 4 or 5 years, and in my sport especially, for what it does. And I see teams now starting to do things that the injury to take care of players, which I see all the time. But they don't think about it. They think about the now, Segs, I guess what I'm saying. They don't think right. about past, and they think about the now. And that now, how much money can I get so I can do it? And I get it, but that's the battle you'll get, Segs. The young guys hoping to be stars. The middle-of-the-road guys that think, man, I'm on the cusp, and then the cagey veterans. And then there's that journeyman who's never rich. I mean, he makes good money, but is just going to play on 12 different teams or 8 different teams, and that's okay too. It's better money than you're getting working at a business right now coming out.
Right.
So there's perspective in it all. What I don't want to hear is when a guy says, you know, I made $250 million. I still got to feed my family. Just leave that out of your conversation, because then we all look like you're a friggin' dumbass, okay? Save it. But it's going to be – and it says everybody thinks that the players will all be on the same page behind those doors. They're not going to be. Right. They're just not going to. Now, most of them will, but you're going to get the one who says – the guy who's a forward thinker and says, well, wait, what about this? But I get the player's point. And then the billionaires are just going to say, dude, this is a hobby for us. I can hold out as long as your ass thinks you can hold out. But what the danger is, then you lose the fan because they don't have a seat at the table. They never do. Their seat at the table is the beer just went up $3 and you're paying for it or somebody else will. And the ticket's going up. They don't have a seat at the table and they never will. And that's the most important seat for the fans. I mean, for the players to make sure outside the thing, because when that goes away, then you start fire sale and the rest of it. So as a player, I'm battling. As an owner and a fan, I think the player's probably overpaid, but I'm all for it. I'm not in their wallet. This is what the system's created. But you can't go from 12-carat diamond ring, perfect cut, segs, and head back to Cuba Zirconia because no player in his right mind. That's when you do think about the future player. You think about, no. We're not doing this because the billionaires already control 90% of the money in the world anyway. So you don't get to do that. So right. I can just tell you this. If you're smart, prepare to get your golf game right. Not you, but any of us. Because a work stoppage is around the corner. Because this is just when this much money's involved and all the little the peripheral stuff that we don't even talk about that is going to be in that meetings on the table is going to be important to see. George, real quick, I'll just answer this now. We got our question segment at 12:40. Yep. Sean, been a big fan. Thank you. I appreciate it. Is this your new show? This is our unpaved daily noon with Segs. We're adding pieces, building studio, and we got other stuff going on as well. But this is the one. You can get it on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, right here on Rumble, wherever. So, George, every day at noon live, Central, 1 o'clock Eastern. And I can't wait for you to see where it's going with my great co-host and producer and the behind the scenes and a few other pieces we're adding. We really want to make it to where you come, you see it once, and you say, you know what, this is where I want to be because we're getting good stuff and authentic stuff and passionate stuff and good battle. The place that we want you to come and stay and feel like it's part of your home, man. We love that.
And sometimes Sean will tell you he likes to take one for the team and take on the big girl.
Sometimes
that's
you have
how he used to do it.
Well, this is what a team player does, Shakes. Well, and you yesterday proved that you weren't a team player because you said you made those three goals.
I'm the guy
I'm team player to a point guy, right?
I'm the running back that there's 17 seconds left and, you know, we're going to score and go up and you're supposed to take the knee. No, give me the damn touchdown.
You want 6 points. That's on your money incentive at the end of the year.
Give me the stats.
His thanks is the Irish. He's the Irish goodbye guy.
Yeah.
We're all in the bar. Saying, hey, man, I'll see you guys. Yeah. I'm going to run to the restroom. And then we don't see you again until the next day. That's when it comes to the big girl, right? It's like, I got you. And then you're gone and she's left there by herself.
Right.
And now you got to invite her over to the crib with the two of you. And then you're
I'm
really
not forcing a ball into double coverage with the chance of throwing an interception and hurting my bottom line.
Sometimes I have, and I got intercepted, brother, on and off the field. Trust me.
Before we get to some college football talk, you kind of mentioned it, what we're doing with the show. John Mamola from Barrett Sports Media, he put up a great story on you and what we're doing and your time at iHeart. So go check that out. That's a great story.
Yeah, John, thank you. And it's fair. And it was John has been in the business a long time, Segs. You've known him a long time.
Yeah.
And has been a great on-air program director. He's just been a phenomenal, and now he's doing this. And Jason Barrett's a guy, my years at ESPN, JB was just there. So he's created this phenomenal company, honestly, that is and they care about people that lost their gigs and stuff. And I just am really I'm grateful for John because he's always honorable in his writing and fair and does it right. And for them to reach out. And the irony of it, they reached out even long before the iHeart thing happened. So it's crazy. But I'm so grateful for people who tell it fairly and right. And Segs, I'm glad they got to mention you and Triple E. This team's going with us wherever we go, guys, with a few additions. So I'm glad Segs, they know yours. And I did make a point to say, the great thing about Segs is that he's the calming influence with my nut job self. So it's the perfect mix of Harvey Korman and Tim Conway at some point. So there you go, man. So, John, thank you. And thanks to JB and Barrett Sports Media for helping us. Because you know what? I'm not too proud to beg for a kickstart for more people knowing about the bandwidth of the show. And that's what business is all about. And we got good people on here. And it all starts with you guys in this column with all your questions and your kind comments. So, George, thank you. Yeah, this is it right here, brother.
And then poll questions. Let's wrap up the one from yesterday. After a full weekend of football, do you like having two Monday night games? And the answer was no. almost 72% sat at no. And I think that's where I had it. It's just like you said yesterday, Sean, you just get burned out by time Monday night comes. You just kind of want one game to relax and sit and watch. And
when too you much thinking on a Monday, dude, it's too much. Yeah. I just really need one. Is. Like, and it's just, the players, they deserve that one game. That was the special moment, man. They deserve to have one game where all their peers and buddies are watching. Oh man, I didn't get to see it. Normally it was like, yeah, I saw you on Monday night. 30 other teams are watching. And now it's like, no, man, I missed yours. I was watching the other guy. So I just, let's get back to one game. But another reason why Sags is because they love the money and the broadcast. And I get it, but I just want one. And now when I say, well, who's the Monday Night Football team? Well, of course we know it is. It's Troy and Joe, two of the best in the world at what they do, you know, who both know sports great. And you can see their chemistry too, Sags. So that's the, and like Dan and Chris Fowler and Riddick do it. Lewis Riddick do a great job, but, and they want to, I don't blame them because they want to get, and they put up good work to know that look what they're doing and they break it down well. But for me, it's Howard Cosell, Frank Gifford, and Don Meredith. That's what it is. You know, that for me, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And I want one. I know people like more football, but by Monday gets here, Segs, I need a little respite on my couch, not toggling back and forth and having to watch two TVs. Too much work for my brain.
Yeah. And then today's question, in the NIL era of college sports, should college coaches with massive buyouts have performance-based contracts? So maybe the buyout isn't as bad if you're struggling as a team, with more money redirected towards the roster instead. So if you're struggling, they can take some of that money and put it towards the roster. Your two options are yes, pay players, or no, pay market value to the coaches, and whatever the coaches get, that's what they get. You can find it at Unpaved on Rumble. Search that up. And this Chase, one, one's tough.
Yeah, me too. Like, we already pay players.
Yes, we do.
We're already paying them, and we're paying them quite handsomely. Thank you. And then you know, I guess I've always felt you're worth what you can negotiate, right?
Yeah.
And if the teams, if you're negotiating, and you guy goes and James Franklin's getting 60 or Jimbo Fisher 70 or whatever it was with A&M. Oh well. They hired you. They trusted you. It didn't work. The performance wasn't there, so you got rid of them. It's their money. I know people have a problem with it. I wouldn't feel sorry for universities because they got a booster that's paying for it. That's part of it. So if they're paying for it, blame the people who are paying for it, not the guy. You know, I go in, I want $5 million a year to do my local morning show. Well, great. But guess what? They ain't going to pay it. If they do, that's on them. I'm going to try to give you the best and perform just like in sports it is. But to me, there's almost got to be, I don't know, Sigs, we do an adjustable scale on the buyout that your buyout, I don't know. See, the team, at that point in time, you almost feel like the buyout should lessen the you know how incentives, oh, you won a national championship. Here's another $500,000 bonus. Right. Should we be able to go the other way? Oh, we didn't win 9 games this year, so the buyout drops $1 million for next year. I don't know how, but I know Coach said, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, dude, it's amazing how they want the guaranteed money, but then you see performance fall off on players and coaches at times. Why? Because they got the bag. And it doesn't happen for everybody. So this one is hard for me too, because I think we're on the course of paying players. But I also think that the buyout money, if it's the universe, if it's the sports department, the buyout money comes in. I always wonder, what do they do with that money, Sakes? I'm talking about, like, if a guy leaves to go to another school, not in James Franklin's case, let's say somebody comes, you just leave the job and it's a $25 million buyout.
Like Bill Belichick has a $1 million buyout for himself that he has to pay to the school if he were to leave for a media job or an NFL job.
And a lot of times what these guys will do is negotiate if they're going to another place, new school, pay the buyout to the other school. So it doesn't, or you just like, oh, it was a $10 million buyout, so I add $10 million to the contract, so it goes back to them, so I'm not losing money, right? Or others would just say, screw that, I'm going to take that money until the buyout's done and until the contract runs out, and we'll go. I just always wonder, do we know where the money goes? Let's say you're the AD at Southern Cal, and I've got the job, like in a Lane Kiffin situation where Lane leaves Tennessee to go. Let's just go back in time before NIL was in it. And you call me up and say, Sean, man, your dream guy. I got the, I'm the AD. I want you to come here. I know your buyout's $25 million. Bam. I say, yes, Eggs, that's my alma mater. Of course I'm coming with you. You're my guy, and we'll do this together. Sign a 5-year deal. What are you paying me? Blah, blah, blah. And you're taking care of the buyout. Yep, we're taking care of the buyout. Where's that $25 million go? Back to Tennessee or back to the school the coach left? Who gets that money? Do we know? Does it go to the – does it filter like back it into just, the athletic program?
Yes, that's what I figure.
Do you raise the AD's salary? Is that a bonus for him because he cut it? Because he was able to let the coach go? Does it go into the academic part of the program, to stadium facilities? Where does that money on the buyout go? For instance, if Cignetti leaves, I don't know. Where does Indiana, when Penn State pays Indiana their money, it'll say the coach, but it's coming from his new job. Where's the money go? Do they filter it and say, hey, part and parcel, man? Because here's the only part for the players that I'd understand why people would tell players. I was recruited to coach to play for you, and now you're bailing on me. So if I stay here, does that money filter down? But yet now with all the transfer portal, that argument's hard to defend now because the coach comes back to you and says, well, you committed to coming here. Well, I'm not starting, so I'm leaving. You pay. I'm going to get paid somewhere else. So now we're going down a two-way street, unlike it used to be where the player. So, you know, there's so many friggin' layers to this and to that poll question. I initially say you're worth what you can negotiate. Start. Mm-hmm. We don't need to pay players anymore because we're already on a slippery slope and need it regulated anyway. So I think there's an in-between, like in most answer segs, we got one and one. Somewhere in between, that answer lies. And I sure as hell don't know what it is, but I'd like to be part of a committee that was able to help figure it out. That'd be fun to sit in that room and hash over it and then bring in people that were just the people that got to buy tickets to games and say, what would you guys do?
Yeah,
you're making $60,000 a year at your construction job. What would you do? I know that sounds cheesy, but I'm always, because I grew up in a family like that.
Yeah.
That going to two games a year was enough. We couldn't afford it, especially if it was football. That's not woe was me. We just couldn't. Dan, that was your parents' mortgage on a $75,000 home back when my mom and dad were doing it. So you couldn't go. So, but we just never, and I pine for it all the time. They never get a seat at the table. There's plenty of smart $60,000 a year people, Segs, that quite frankly have a lot more clearance in their head than the person making $600 million, okay? Because that's skewed a little bit. So, I don't know. There's things to do, but whatever you do, put together the committee that knows how to figure it out because we're in for one hell of a run with NIL and the transfer portal and, as we mentioned, collective bargaining when it comes to Major League Baseball. And it all follows one path, dollars and cents, nothing else.
Yep, it's all about money when everything comes down to it. You talked about Kurt Cignetti. Let's talk about his Indiana Hoosiers. How likely or where do you put them in the echelon of right now they're ranked third? Fernando Mendoza's playing great, great football. The fact that he's I saw a mock draft from one of the big ESPN guys today. Had him going number one. So
got everything. He can move. He's got an arm. Yeah, he's smart.
6'5", 225, big
he's
body.
Performing. He's performing in a tough conference. Yeah. Yes.
He's completing over 70% of his passes, not turning the ball over. I think he's only got two picks on the year, almost 20 touchdown passes. But when you look at this Indiana team, do you think, okay, there's Miami and Ohio State. Is it the next tier down? Is there another tier? And then you get to Indiana. Where do you put them on an actual national championship contender level right now?
Segs, and I love this direction. And Mendoza, I first started watching him early, and then I've watched more of him and more of him and more of him, and actually watching him double time because I'm like, this dude may be a Sunday, not just a Sunday player, but a high-time Sunday player. And I love his size, but I also love the fact that he's not just some big stiff that can't make plays outside the pocket too, like some of us were.
Yeah.
I was asked this question on a show this morning, Segs. I was a guest, and but it wasn't about this, but it applies. And so I'm going to put the question they asked me to you, and it applies to this, so I can give you the answer, so we both get an answer. He said, you got 250. He said, first off, who are the best two teams or best three teams in the league, Sean? In the NFL, he said. Mm-hmm. My buddy Carmichael Dave. You know Dave. You know
what I mean? Yeah.
Now, right? On his show. And he said, I said, well, for my money consistently, and it wasn't on your bingo card, it's the Colts and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. if you're really looking at the Chiefs are looming. We got to put it this way. It's, you know, I like a golf leaderboard where it's the two guys at the top and then seven tied and seven under par, yeah, right, in round three on moving day. That's what we are in the NFL. No great teams, some really good ones, and two or three that are playing pretty damn consistent football, right? And you brought out the great point yesterday of while we were all, you know, slobbering over Buffalo the first 4 weeks, they beat a bad Baltimore team, the Saints, the Dolphins, and the Jets. Stop the slobber, okay? Even though, because I know what it goes with, because I'd slobber, it's Josh Allen. We're all slobbering over that, how good he is. But he said 250 grand, Sean. Okay, you took the Colts to Tampa. Today, would you bet that $250,000 and you had to bet it on, are those two in the Super Bowl? And you know what my answer was? As much as I love him and I'm pulling for him and Baker's the MVP, you'd probably say no. You'd think more blue blood, Kansas City's going to come. You think they're, because we're still treading on who is Daniel Jones really this guy? And is Tampa good enough outside of Baker with all the wide receiver injuries? Can they sustain it? Right. And it's unfair to those two teams because they are playing like it, but we would hesitate. And it goes to your question now, Segs, of where does Indiana fit in all this? And after the way they played this year, we damn well should say they belong in the upper tier this year. It's not a blue blood football program. Hell, it doesn't even have it. It just, Cignetti's put some blood into the program.
Yes.
You go back, I mean, it's now, the blood's a little pink, starting to get red and blue blood. I mean, and then when it goes from red to blue, you're saying, okay, but that's their basketball program we're talking about in Assembly Hall. So, but you know what? He doesn't care about blue blood. What good coaches care about is how are we going to make it where it looks like it, to where you show up to our building. They're doing everything a good football team needs, Segs. They're playing physical. They've got great ingenuity and great creativity in the way they go about their business, a good coaching staff, and a dynamic head coach, and a quarterback. Pretty good start, right?
Yes.
Now, if you were asking me this and they were doing it in a small conference, Segs, and, you know, I'm not dogging the Big 12. The Big 12 doesn't have the teams right now that Texas Tech will get. Let's say Texas Tech or Indiana, they belong in the same verbiage. They just do. So if it was one of those, you'd say, yeah, I believe in him. But would you take 250 grand and bet it that Indiana is going to be in the national title game? And 99% of people would say no, unless you're a Hoosier alum. Why? Because we want to see more of it. Well, last year was pretty good. And I'll tell you what leaves a sour taste in people's mouth. The way they got beat in the playoff last year. Yep. That bothers people. And it shouldn't, because this is a new year. Because 5 years ago, you wouldn't even – Indiana was just, oh, they're good for an upset when Penix is there, but they're not very good, right? And now what he's done, but it's a new regime. So, Segs, well, I got to get out of my way. I watched them play and beat good teams. I've watched them play better than LSU. I've watched them play better than Georgia. I'm not saying head-to-head, but I'm talking about just the body of work. Why not? They're better than Florida State. They're better than Florida just by performance this year. Yeah. So I'm just saying
LSU.
Yeah, damn right.
Oklahoma.
So that's exactly. I would have said USC until this past weekend against your guys after the Illinois game. I said Indiana's better than them. Hell, Oregon, we gave all the credit and they went in there and curb stuffed their ass. So yeah, Segs, they deserve it. The question is, can they give you this the rest of the year in a brutal conference? But hell, instead of being the one where everybody says, well, is Indiana real? Maybe we should be saying you're going to have a tough task beating Indiana. And then as they go along, can they go bingo, bango, bongo title in the final 12, depending on what draw they get in the rest of it? So they deserve respect, and shame on us for not giving it to them because of past and, oh, it's the Hoosiers last year. Of course they're going to go away and hide and be done.
Right.
But now I ask you, give me Cignetti with Kirby Smart's players. Are they a top-ranked team in the country? Right at it? You're damn right they are. So that's the key is, truthfully, Segs, they're turning three stars into five-star performers. In truth, they are these last couple of years. Yet they don't get the guy because when it's all said and done, and they're not spending the same money that you guys or us at SC are spending. So it's a tribute to them that I don't even want to say overachieved because they get talented players. And maybe it's a tribute to them that they're able to find good players and develop them that other teams don't think belongs on their roster. And I'll guarantee you could walk up and down that roster and say, did Michigan, Ohio State, or Southern Cal recruit you? They'll say, no, nobody did. And so there's some incentive in that. Indiana, Texas Tech, those stick out right now. They've proven to me now, I know record, Texas Tech's got to play a little tougher schedule. I get what you're saying, but we've seen signs that this team's here to stay with spending, right, Segs?
Right.
Hell, think about if Indiana was spending Texas Tech's money, the way they're performing in the Big Ten. It might even be a different look, right, Segs? That five-star quarterback that's a freshman may end up going there as opposed to the Buckeyes or to your team at Michigan, right? You never know. So
yeah.
I think, yes, I do put him there because I've seen They've got the elements you need to do it. The question is, do they have the depth if there's two key injuries to withstand that Big Ten romp or getting into the postseason and playing teams from the SEC?
Yeah, well, one thing that helps them is, yes, they played three like small schools to start the year. But then you go, you beat Illinois, who was ranked, I think, at the top 10 at the time. They were number nine.
They just beat them, right? Segs A dismantled them, right?
Iowa, who's always tough. We know they're not going to score much, but they're going to play. They're one of the best defenses in the country. You beat them, and then you go to Oregon and win. And their remaining schedule is Michigan State, who's bad word
here. They should Jonathan, win.
Yeah, Jonathan Smith being on his way out. A new look UCLA team who is still not very good, but they're playing well. But the game's in Bloomington, so you feel like
those eggs because dangerous. They're playing free, right? They're like, what do we got to lose? We're on an interim coach and we're rolling. We got a new coordinator and, you know, Knowles in there doing his thing.
Yeah.
But they're dangerous because they're playing with confidence now. But, yes, they should win. Indiana should win that game.
Maryland, who's a good football team. They're solid.
If they both play their best game, Indiana wins by double digits.
Yes. Penn State. Now, we have to wait and see how that happens. You know, what happens with the interim and Grunkenmeyer playing and all this, how they
look. The guys are playing pissed for pride and trying to save.
Right. And then they Wisconsin and Purdue, two of the worst teams in the Big Ten. So, now, I mean, you could be looking
at
a team.
Where's Penn State being played?
Penn State is being played in Happy Valley. So,
well, that's no longer – it sure doesn't feel like that's a – That's that difficult considering what went on, but there is some pride. There's some good players there. Say they can go undefeated, and be sitting in one of the top seed positions. Yep. Honestly,
you get so that.
The committee gives you the with the way it is 12 now, and obviously people want to move to 16, and we're one play 16. You get that bye week if you want. And we're no longer doing it. It's the reseed. We're just taking the top four, right?
Right.
The committee's voting on the top four, and wherever you are, if you're ranked second going in, you're the second. We're putting you in the second if you're first. Right now, all arrows point to the fact that they're going to be staring right at it because I don't see Cignetti letting them have a two-game letdown against that easy-ass second-half schedule. But I'm not blaming them for it. We thought Penn State would be better. Maryland's solid. We thought Wisconsin would put up a little bit of fight at least, right? Like, but I'm a believer, Segs, but I still tread lightly, just like I do with my USC Trojans, honest to God. I still don't know. I buy in, but – half the other foot still sitting outside the door saying, are we what I saw against Michigan? And I think because of last year, people are saying, well, is Indiana that team that's going to get curb stomped in the postseason, or are they different again this year? And that helped them become a better team. I love the coach. Love the coach.
About this time is when we'll start taking questions from Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. Our comment section here on Rumble. So send in your questions. But I have one here from Dr. J that he sent on X earlier today. And he asks, where'd it go? There it is. We hear all the time that there's a shortage of franchise quarterbacks. And we're seeing it again this year with all the guys who were Nussmeier, Klubnik, Aller, all these guys that were supposed to be great. And the next group of, you know, supposed to be 1, 2, 3 in the draft to now we don't have any. Nobody has them in the top of the draft. If Arch is another one that hasn't played well enough to garner where everybody had him going in the draft. But is it because of the coaching? Is it where it's just because he puts in here? Is it because of a shortage of good coaches, or is it just the good old boy network where friends are still hiring friends? Because we see guys like he mentions Luke Getsy, Shane Waldron. These guys just continue to get NFL jobs if it's an OC or a passing game, run game coordinator where they're heavily involved with the offense. And while we still see it not work, they still keep getting jobs. So where's this fine line of, or is it just saying that in high school now, all these kids are just playing shotgun and it's just the way the game's being played? I mean, where's this fine line of shortage of really good franchise quarterbacks?
Segs, and I think in this case, it's a great question by Dr. J, is I don't think there's one answer. And the reason why we don't know about the coaching is if you and I were sitting in the Lenora Sellers quarterback room Nussmeier's quarterback room, you know, where we get to see every single day how they're processing, what's being taught, and then watch them practice every day. Other than the people we talk to, they're close to the programs. It's hard to say bad coaching. Yet I can tell you that there's some horseshit play calling. If you consider that bad, that I do know. Secondly, guys see you 1 year. They know your strengths. Defensive coordinators aren't stupid. They know how to make you – they know how to look at Spagnuolo. They know how to lead you to your weakness or what the perceived weakness is. I think it's combo things. I think, number one, they're not prepared mechanically when the shit hits the fan to deal with adversity. Some – I'm not saying these guys, particularly any quarterback, anybody you'd consider a high school great player to go to college that we expect, or a great college player going to the NFL. I think we – shield them from adversity, and when it hits, we either want to bench them or we coddle them. One, I think that there's at times that it is old boy network where you're hiring your buddy just because you've had success in the past, but he's not willing to change or doesn't quite maybe able to call plays, can't teach the position, maybe able to teach the position, but can't call plays. And there is no doubt we get them mentally, they're a step back. Not that their IQ is any good.
Right.
Their football IQ hasn't been expanded. Why? In college, the coach is reading the coverage form and telling them where to throw the damn ball with a card in the hand until damn near before the ball snapped. And they're playing everything. You know what I'm saying? The nut cutting stuff, they're just not prepared for. I mean, for the most part. Now, we say that, and then all of a sudden you see a guy come in and Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels. But then you say, okay, how were they coached previously, and what did they learn? I think it's not one. There is no way it's just we over-scouted them. They're not that good. Yeah. Or – we give the guy who did scout him, oh, he's automatic expert. He's been in the league 20 years. No, sometimes they get to the point where they're bored and they read the paper too, or what some scouting service is saying, and say, well, this guy liked him, Todd McShay or Mel Kiper liked him. So let's look at, oh, I like him too. We'd be crazy and the groundswell for him. We got to draft him. And we've seen that happen. Oh, he's athletic. We can turn him into a quarterback. I do. I think it's a combination. And I also think, Segs, that like in Arch Manning, the name and all that, we gave him so much overhype that in truth, first-year starters sometimes play like this in college Sigs, that they struggle a little bit to find their way. And then when they do, if that was the case, if we just did it, Darnold wouldn't be in the league. Daniel Jones would be working on Wall Street. Baker Mayfield would be coaching his high school team at Lake Travis. And all three of them are in the top five MVP vote-getters in my mind right now. Because they went along and they were mentally tough enough to get their ass handed to them and overcome it. That's the normal process. Mahomes ain't the normal route, brother, where you play in your second year and you got the greatest coach and you, the best defensive coordinator, best head coach, and you, that's a pretty good storm, man. Perfect one, as a matter of fact. So I think it's a combination of all of them. But I can tell you this, we have overrated that young equals always being a good coach. And that experienced always means you're a good coach. Neither are true. They can be mutually exclusive or they can be bunched together. The problem is social, and I hate to say it, social media has sped up the process, Sags. It just has. And not that people don't deserve a voice, they do. It's the thing that we all listen to, a million voices. You ever been to a restaurant that's had eight chefs at the same time? The food will be horseshit.
Yep.
Go to one, that's my guy. And then you got to get buy-in. And some guys, listen, statistics can be overrated. Do you have all the other things? That's why this position is so hard to judge from high school to college, college to pro. Sigs, I've trained guys that I said, he's a can't miss. 3 years into it, he's a can't make. You're like, well, what happened? Because you had everything you want, something along the line. Then I've trained guys that said, yeah, he's going to be a good player. Before you know it, the cat's dominating and starting as a freshman because three other guys got hurt and he ain't ever given the job back.
Yeah.
So I've seen it both, but We are unrealistic, but the other side of it is a lot of it has to do with the kids' lonely work drive to be great and what's in their DNA. It just is.
Yeah, you're right that it feels like it's a lot of things come together. You look at coaching, it's these guys like – I mean, I talked about it, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago with Shane Waldron, what he's done to big-time wide receivers. And we see Jackson Smith-Njigba as maybe the
best wide receiver in football
this year. Roma Dunze has a touchdown catch, or should have a touchdown catch, in every game this season. And now Brian Thomas, who did get a touchdown catch last weekend, but still hasn't been used. Travis Hunter isn't being used like he should be. And it's these guys, these type of coaches, that think they know more than everybody else and they don't have to change their system. These guys have to buy into them 100% instead of being 50-50. Look at Greg Roman.
Yes.
He took Lamar Jackson, changed his game. Greg Roman changed his mentality quarterback and fit the offense to Lamar Jackson.
Well, good coaches do.
Multi-time MVP and one of the best quarterbacks in the league when he's healthy.
And good coaches do that. That's what being a good coach is, adjusting for 85 guys as opposed to having 85 guys have to adjust to you or however many are on offense.
Yeah.
And Segs, with that, are we really, when it just comes to coaching, do we really think that Shane Beamer with Lenora Sellers, that Brian Kelly and Nussmeier and Garrett Nussmeier, and that that Sark forgot how to coach? Do we really think they forgot how to coach? A year ago, all three of those guys, Brian Kelly just brought in Jaden Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look at this guy. Look how good he is. And so it actually comes down to usually the guy with the ball in his hand, how good are you? And sometimes you got to know what a coach says, what to file away and use. And quite frankly, I hate to say it, but there's also you got to know what to let in one ear and out the other and say, that's bullshit. I'm not buying into that, because that's counterproductive to what we're trying to get done. So I know Shane Beamer could coach. I know Sark could coach. I know a year ago, Shane Beamer had the hottest program going on. Lenora Sellers was a first-round pick and a Heisman Trophy favorite. A year ago, Brian Kelly's team, wait till Nuss comes back. He decided to come back. Bam, look out. Drew Aller, James Franklin, they finally got the team. Arch, we've been waiting on this. Well, Quinn Ewers is a hell of a player, but Quinn Ewers was Arch 4 years before that when he left South Lake Carroll and Ohio State. So it's a combination of all of it, and it is the hardest position to judge because you really don't know what the DNA says in the gut. Segs, we can all play when it's easy. The key is, like Baker Mayfield's proven to you how to play when it isn't, and it's a great thing to see. That's why. Six, we let it knock out. You know how giddy I am over this AI and Perplexity and Comet thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we take a few other questions, Six, let's hit that. Triple E, let's roll this, because you guys know how fired up I am about this. Six, I'm so pumped up. You've been with me a long time, and you understand my, technology love, but needing a little direction. I found something that's the best in the world, the best in the business. It's a new web browser, Perplexity. It's an AI web browser. It's awesome. It's AI-powered web browser from Perplexity, which I love, and it's Comet. Go to perplexity.ai/Comet. We're going to start there, first off. And Triple E is going to join in and show us as he toggles through what this is. And let me tell you what exactly Comet and Perplexity is. Comet is a new AI-powered web browser from Perplexity. I want you to check it out at that website, perplexity.ai/comment. It can navigate around the web like a human would. Now, we always tell it what to do, but what about telling it what to do? Instead of giving us the answers, they go do it for you, clicking, typing, searching, scrolling like you would, getting what you need done so you can do more. Isn't that the obligation for all of us to want to do more, or at least the freedom to do more while stuff's getting done? Listen, let me ask you something. How much time do you spend every day on a web browser? If you're like me, a lot of it. How much time do you spend clicking around online, searching, scrolling, typing, endless tabs? It's a lot, right? I'm always on there shopping golf apparel or golf clothes, golf balls, all of it, equipment. I love it. Well, there's a new AI web browser from Perplexity called Comet, and it's completely changing the way we are able to interact with your browser or interact with our own browsers, right? Using Comet feels like having a personal assistant literally living in your web browser that can actually do things for you across the internet as you see Triple E toggling around, finding stuff that he's interested in or looking for reservations, movie tickets, reservations with restaurants. Yes, it does things. You do things with Comet, not just talk about it. You do it and you're about it. You don't just get the answers. They get things done. So here we go. Let's see how we're going to handle some of these tasks, Triple E. It literally will click and type and search and scroll just like you would, but it almost feels like there's a human in your web browser to get the things done for you in the background while you go about your day. Okay, Triple E, let's start here. World Series right around the corner. We're in the AL and NL Championship Series. Let's say Dodger hotel reservations in Los Angeles as we get prepared for the playoff game. And then after that, we could say, best Mexican restaurants, so we can get a reservation, get tickets, get our hotel book. But see, we're going to tell them what to do. And then if there's 4, 6 other couples or 2 other couples here, we're going to send them a reminder, send them what's going on and a reminder of the date so they know what's going on so they, too, can get theirs done. See how that works? Instead of finding it where you do it, that, well, feels like a human living in your web browser is doing it for you. It's phenomenal as you see Triple E toggle through that and get the answers you're looking for. And then they'll do the booking and get you the reminders of how it works. Again, like you say, okay, find a great Mexican restaurant in Los Angeles. It's playoff time. Wednesday at a time that fits the calendar. Book it, then send a calendar invite to all the other people that are joining you for this NLCS. By the way, the Dodgers lead it 2-0. And talk to your colleague, John, and give him the details as well. It's common. Listening in, it's pretty cool, right? Download Perplexity's new AI web browser, as you see my guy Triple E doing. Comet, that's COMET, by heading to pplx.ai/Sean and let your browser work for you. Plus, right now, when you download Comet, you get a month of Rumble Premium for free. And that's a big time thing. A month of Rumble Premium for free when you go to pplx.ai/Sean. That's pplx.ai/Sean. It's the Comet web browser. It's changing the way we do business because it frees you up to do a lot of other things. It's the web browser. It's Perplexity AI, and it's Comet. Again, hit that website link and go in there and do it well. It's freeing you up to do all the other things you want. This is a game changer and a needle mover.
Perplexity up. You're muted, Sean.
I turned it right off when I was done. Take a deep breath because, man, that's a lot of good verbiage there, brother. I get so excited about it. But it's a change in the game for me, especially for a guy who needs help when it comes to going through a web browser. So it's nice.
Yes, Perplexity. Remember it. One more question from our fans, and then we'll do one more topic that I think you'll find interesting because it involves quarterbacks. It involves rules. We've talked about the stuff. But
is this what you teased yesterday, Sex?
Yes.
You teased this yesterday with? Okay.
If Alex Bregman opts out, which reports are saying he will opt out of his contract with the Red Sox, will he return to the Red Sox? Old Man 016 asks here in the comment section.
I'm going to say yes. Cleared a bunch of – I do. And Sex, I'm just trying to look at the – do you really want to pick up and go somewhere else again? He's always hit against the Red Sox, and he hit against them this year. They actually freed some space up to get rid of Devers with all that money, and they can pay him. I mean, right. Opt out, they can pay him. I'm not going to go rant. I hate opt outs anyway, since you know that. Hey, yes. Come and use us as a bridge so we can turn around and pay you again. Do I think he's going to be Astros fans? So he ain't coming back. Okay. He ain't going back to the Houston Astros because of Correa. Paredes is coming back. They're stockpiled at third base, and they've got some good young players. He's not coming. Plus, they're not going to pay him. They'd have done it the year before. They're not going to pay him what he wants. And what's Bregman looking for, Segs? In the 30 to 35 range, I'd imagine, for 6-7 years probably?
Probably
5 years, 35 like mil, somewhere in there, 38 million. I don't know. Under 40, but over 32, 33, somewhere in there. Because wasn't Devers in the 32, 33 range, Segs? I know the Chapman. I mean, you start to look. Last year, I think the top guys were yearly average were, 27, 28, almost 30 at the position when you take them. But I expected this when you give an opt-out. But he's always hit well against the Red Sox. This is one of the faster starts he had because he's a notorious slow starter. I think Boston loves him. The park is made perfectly for his swing.
Right.
Third base is freed up, and he's a gold glover. And part of this, Segs, me saying this, is the emotional part of my Red Sox DNA love since I was a child, right? So I'm hoping so. But now if somebody comes, if the Dodgers come and blow him out of the water, guess where Alex Bregman's going?
Right.
He's going. And remember who his agent is, who is going to squeeze every ounce of dollars out of the turnip, and that's Scott Boras. And he's supposed to for his client. Short of squeezing so much, the team says, screw you, this is ridiculous. But – his job is to get the most he can for his client. I'm going to say he does go back, Sakes, but I am going to say that he will be open to something that's a monster offer for him. But just on production alone, he has always been good against the Red Sox. And when you get to play 81 of them at home, I would think that he thinks that they got something going on with some good young talent.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he returns. I think it just makes too much sense with the ballpark, the lineup, the team's going to be good. They're going to fight for another playoff spot and division title. And they'll keep getting better with some of these younger kids coming up. You have Crochet. That's where they need to spend a little bit, is that rotation.
Yeah, you're right.
Get that going, and then you have a World Series contending team there with Alex Bregman in the middle of your lineup. And then I just saw this. Yahoo Sports reports that Billy Napier could be fired as early as this weekend, especially if things go bad. So
yeah, bought him a little bit of time with that victory over over the Longhorns.
Yeah.
But it's fleeting. Here we go again. That's it. They're, one doesn't do it. They want the body of work, and it will not surprise me. Then we're going to have the conversation. And Billy's a good dude and knows how to coach. But you go through these stints, and you got a big time quarterback that people like, who's had his struggles at times this year. I just the question is, who's going to be that big name? Because that's a great job, Segs. That is a great place, Gainesville, and they can win there because they're going to get players, and I think they'll spend. If he has another floundering game, and their schedule says that there's going to be another floundering game with the teams they got to play, I would expect that Florida's going to have a new coach. We got an epidemic in the NFL and college of during season coaches getting fired.
Yeah.
And while it happens once in a while, it doesn't happen at this pace that we've seen these last couple of years.
And it just goes back to the point of what we were talking about when we talk about the shortage of big-time quarterbacks and franchise quarterbacks. People, fans, media, boosters, ADs, they don't have the patience anymore to wait around while you continue to lose games. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, like you said, Baker Mayfield was not great right away. Boom, gone out of Cleveland. Sam Darnold, oh, you suck. See ya. Like, it's just, there is no more of that. Oh, I mean, in this day and age, Peyton Manning comes in, throws 28 interceptions. He's not starting next year. Like, that's just the way things are. Tom Brady probably would have never got the time of day. Even with the way he started, he's a six-round pick. We don't normally see those guys get their chances.
Well, when you have one bad game as a six-round pick, they're replacing you, Segs. You don't have patience. You don't. It's amazing. We'll give more. And when you do, you'll give 4 years to the first-round pick normally in the past. And the sixth-round pick, if you make one mistake in a game, they just say, that's why you're taking the sixth round, get him out. Because if you remember, he didn't exactly start like a gang bite. It's not like he kicked ass from the second Bledsoe got hurt. He had to find his way through it. So you 100% correct, Segs, with that. George, we do all kinds of stuff on the show. Today's a big sports day. We'll laugh with politicians. We'll laugh at politicians. We talk current events. We talk, peace with, President Trump bringing peace and changing the world when it comes to pee. We'll talk about it all. We laugh. We talk food. We talk it all. But we also are not going to fatigue you with stuff that you're getting beat down with every day. This is an entertainment, fun, laugh, sports, passion show mixed in with other stuff. We try to be versatile and play whatever the gold hits are. But we also play what we like. And hopefully you guys will like it too. But we're not going to beat you down with politics to the point, gosh dang, Sean. We don't need that. I Sags, I always talk about fatigue and just it gets maddening and insufferable. We're not going to give that to you. We are going to talk it. Hell, there's sometimes we'll talk 30 minutes of it. And if it's the biggest story of the day, men playing against women in college sports will be a continued topic, which is horse shit, but we'll hit it hard. So yes, but today is a fan friendly sports day with no fatigue.
Well,
here you go.
I'll say this to Isaiah, who asked about Jordan Love and does he have the pedigree to win a Super Bowl. As a Bears fan, hell no. He sucks. Go away, Jordan Love.
And he doesn't have the pedigree because he hasn't won one. The pedigree.
Is does that fan friendly enough for you?
Yeah, there they go. Does he have Segs is like, yeah, the screw. The guy could be Favre and Rogers mixed, and he'd say, screw those guys, they suck. I think Jordan Love has the ability and the balls to do it. He does. But until he does it once, the pedigree doesn't mean anything until he gets them deep and does it. But I've seen enough about him to know when things are going good, he's got the ability to raise a team's game.
I think it's more
that about division's filled with good quarterbacks, brother. It really is.
I think it's more about his receivers stepping up.
Agreed.
To become, and that's probably
the Rodgers went through that. Rodgers went a little bit through that too.
He went through that, but Rodgers also had that ability to take a seventh round pick and turn him into a great, great player.
Getting paid.
You still right. got to see that from Jordan Love. And that's right. on the receivers too. I mean, Matthew Golden, first round pick this year, hasn't really been what a lot of people thought he'd come in and just take over because of the wide receiver group. They're not being, they're just kind of a mixture of decent players. And I think Matthew Golden has a higher ceiling than that, but Reed, you know, all these guys, they're dealing with injuries. Christian Watson hurt again. It's no just,
doubt. I can't think he do what Baker Mayfield's guys. Doing. That's what we're yes. going to find out with all those yes. injuries.
Cause the team, the defense is great when you have all that pass rushing and they're great. So yes, I think they can't. It's got
they have the right. Up. If the question is really, do they have franchise quarterback? We overuse. What is that? Is it 2 year? We wait 2 years. We wait 5 years, 4 years. Does he have the ability? And has he shown me enough to know that's the quarterback? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Packers don't need to address that position for a long time.
But they suck. Anyways, QB rule change. I sat and I watched the Bears game, and we saw early in the game. Montez Sweat got a roughing the passer penalty because his hand came down and kind of landed on his face mask and visor and then just kind of like pushed through a little bit and he just turned his head. Later in the game, we saw Jaquan Brisker get pushed by the left tackle, which forced him kind of falling down to hit Jaden Daniels, which, I mean, if you see it, his shoulder pad goes into his thigh and then he slid down towards the knee. It looked bad. Of course, they're going to call it. That's going to happen in the NFL. But my proposed rule change is, and I think they got rid of this rule actually now that I think about it, but to have two different variances where there's roughing the passer where, okay, if you want to call that Brisker play, I know he was pushed and maybe that's something you can review, you know, just like we talked about, review penalties. That should be one. But if he does hit him in the thigh, that shouldn't be a penalty, in my opinion. We got to
stop the knee, above the knee, below the armpit. Yes. Should never be a penalty.
Yes. But okay, the Montez Sweat one, where you come down, he didn't like smack through his head. He just kind of placed it on his head as he was coming down and maybe pushed a little bit. I want a roughing the passer, and I don't know, however you want to call it, whatever you want to call it. Running into the passer, you know, how it's just a 5 yard penalty that's not an automatic first down. And maybe that's where it's egregious. Like in, I mean, we have where
there's, didn't we do that with the punter? Now we've changed it. It's just automatically roughing.
Yeah,
it used to be running into was 5 yards. Roughing was 15. Automatic first down.
Right. They got rid of that where it's
you. Can it's kinda, always roughing.
Yeah, you can kind of hit the punter
it's
now
intent. If it's very softly.
It's intent. Yeah,
it's exactly. intent. And the Montez Sweat thing. Listen, if it just happens like that, momentum.
I mean, like that can't be a penalty. I'm sorry. It's five. It's because that was a big third down early in the game to get off the field. And if that's Thanks. Only 5 yards, it's still fourth down and we go on.
He didn't inflict any pain on the quarterback. It right. did not disrupt the throw. I'm talking about the after now, his presence big up like that did, but you're coming down. Your hand unfortunately landed. It didn't have anything to do with the outcome of the play. His initial pressure did, but not the hit. That should not be a penalty. That's such a pussy move. I can't stand it. And if you're Jaden Nam as well, you'll take a penalty. You're like, no quarterback thinks that's a penalty, dude. None. Now, talk to those guys. None of them do. Matter of fact, right. in your rules committee, set the quarterbacks in there and let them help you decide because most of them will err on the side of quit pussifying this so much. Let's play some football because I'm tired of listening to the guys calling us pussies because you guys screwed up the rule. Right. And now quarterbacks start looking for a simple one. But say, I'm okay with the intent part of it. And if you're blocked into a quarterback and you hit him in a spot that you're not supposed to hit him, that's not on you. That should be treated just like you getting blocked into the punter or getting blocked into the fair catch. Okay. Why? I mean, that guy's career is just as valuable as the quarterback's. I know people at home may not think so, but to him, his career is right. Taking a roughing, there's got to be intent involved and there's got to be just the natural progression of a play. You go up at some point, you're in midair, your arms are going to come down. And if they happen to hit and rub across that did not disrupt the quarterback's throw or impede his ability to throw the football or get him hurt. Now, if all of a sudden you hit him upside the head, he falls back, hits his head on the turf. Okay. Yeah. There's got to be some it's simply says you're looking for a common sense rule and they don't have it when it comes to the quarterback. And I promise you, as I'm sitting here now from my era to now, you will get a very, very, very small percentage in a private vote. They will say, if I showed that to him, matter of fact, I can't imagine one quarterback without knowing the rules saying, is that roughing the quarterback? They're going to say, get the fuck out of here. That's not roughing anybody. That's called just natural football. Now, guy comes in, grab it, yank it down, push it, hits his chin up, or you hit him under the chin with the helmet, fine. Segs, I don't even think hitting a crown of your helmet into the quarterback's chest or the middle of his back, I wouldn't call that a penalty. That's just good, solid football.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, as a quarterback, here's what we beg for. Hit me as hard as you want, below the neck and above the knees. Hit me as hard as you want, dude. As a matter of fact, I appreciate it when you drive into me where there's padding, like the upper part of my shoulder pads in the back, or you know, down near the hamstrings, where just that area. Well, you know what it is? It's the strike zone.
Yeah.
Just know the little league strike zone and let us go play football. And most quarterbacks would agree, because none of us like the label, even though the rules set up to the player. There's plenty of tough guys playing the position right now. The problem is they're all swinging their head over there saying, oh, that's got to be a penalty because the guy's fingertip touched my face mask.
Right.
That's not football. That's flag football, and that's pussy stuff. And unfortunately, we're there and got to fix it.
Yeah, and we saw another penalty in that Chiefs-Lions game where Aiden Hutchinson makes a play, and does he take two steps and kind of run it? Probably, but it's not like he shoved Patrick Mahomes. It's not like he speared him. He just ran into him basically with his chest and his hands up, and they called roughing the passer. So that's where
it's out of hand, Sage. It's out of friggin' hand.
And the thing I don't like, I know these guys are paid – you know, these high-end players are paid $50 to $60 million to play this position. It's the most important position in sports, not taking anything away from that.
Well,
but when you can pass a ball to a wide receiver on a crossing route and a DB can come up and cut him at the knee, right at the knee, which we see week in, week out of players coming off the field because a DB put their helmet or their shoulder pad directly into their knee as they're planting, then I have to question, why can we do that to those players? But if you accidentally fall and go low on a quarterback, it's an automatic penalty. You give the team 15 yards, a free first down, and you're probably in field goal range with the way we've dumbed up the kickoff. Like, it's just it's insane.
And I don't want to hear anybody say, well, a quarterback can't protect himself. You're right. Certain dirty hits or late hits, he can't. But neither can a receiver who's going for the football. He leaves a whole place. But on the defensive side of the ball, if you dip your head and fall down and I'm trying to hit you in the waist and you go down and helmet to helmet, that ain't on me, man. I'm trying to hit you in the right spot. So it's maddening every single week. Of course, we want the rule to protect. But you're going to tell me, go ask the quarterback when an offensive lineman blows out his knee that we don't protect, or that wide receiver that goes out because of a hit, that his career is more important than the wide receivers. I know to the optics of, we got to have our stars. Well, guess what? I want to ask you how good Burrow is without his two wide receivers if they're both hurt. So it is, we favor it. It's that, but you know what? If Ohtani gets hit in the rib cage with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, or if the guy who's a rookie who is just being called up gets hit, the guy's still going to first base with a hit pitch. Okay, that's just the way. We're not favoring Ohtani anymore now. Probably better to hit him than let him hit a grand slam, but get my point, Segs. We have got to protect the integrity of football while protecting the health of all players.
Yes.
But football is a violent sport. Guys are going to get hurt.
It's going to be violent. Yes.
Injuries are going to happen. The intent is, if I hit you in the spot, violent hits that are legal should not be penalized.
Right.
Violent hits that aren't should be. If you keep it to that, it becomes really really an easy game to understand, and then it becomes real football. Again, Segs, I got an answer from my guy Brody, who is familiar with the coaches and buyouts. Mm-hmm. He said the money goes, you know, when a buyout, where's that money go? When the buyout comes back and you want the money back, the money goes to the new coach's contract, the one they're going to bring in, or the buyout. And on the other side, he said, but if the money stays with the football operations balance sheet. So if it leaves the program on the balance sheet, it comes back in on the same balance sheet. They don't distribute it anywhere else across the university.
That makes sense. It would go to the next coach, you know, them paying, you know.
Well, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. It's not commingling, but you're moving funds to pay funds that are legal along the normal balance sheet. And that's where it should go.
Yeah, and the reason you're putting in that buyout, that if a coach were to leave, they have to pay, or the school that he's going to has to pay that, is because you're losing a coach that's under contract. Like, it's so there's just a lot of layers to that.
And Fertitta at Houston, remember when Tom Herman came in? Yeah. He was tired. He left to Texas. He was tired. He's one of those guys that said, I'm tired of you guys. This is not a bridge program anymore. So, right. You know, these buyouts have increased because you don't want him to leave. But the problem is, if the dude is struggling, then the school's hosed because you're like, oh, gosh, we got to pay this. Right. And Penn State, I assure you, as is Texas A&M, even though they got the money, 25 or 50-some million is 50-some million.
Yeah.
That'll hurt. I don't care if it's Elon Musk's balance sheet. You still feel $50 million on your balance sheet, brother, and the bottom line.
And we did find out that James Franklin has to be out there actively searching for a job, if it's in as coaching, if it's in the media, just because, I mean, and it's a clause in his contract that he has to be actively searching for said job, whichever that is, because whatever he's paid, let's say he's paid, ESPN pays him $1 million to come in and do the rest of the season. Well, that's $1 million off of what Penn State has to pay him out of his buyout. So that would be, you know,
That's to prevent the double dip, right?
Say, yes. Right. Career. Right.
Although it's an argue, say, I'm not coaching, so you owe me this.
You fired me. Signed,
yeah, you fired me, and this is a TV contract. I ain't coaching at ESPN. I'm talking on sports. If they want to pay me $1 million, that's just a bonus. You still owe me my $55 million bucks or whatever it is. I get the argument there too.
If he goes to an Amazon warehouse and makes $25 an hour, does that come off his $60 million or whatever?
Think of that conversation. Well, James, you're in breach of your contract. You didn't report to us. You were making $25,000 loading Amazon trucks to get Christmas gifts. That's not a good job. We need those guys. But
yes,
when you're making a $55 million buyout, it's like, yeah, because those jobs were my pops, driving the truck or being the construction guy. But it's like, James, you owe us $34,000 for what? That Christmas job you got,
picked up some hours
at Amazon. You were protecting the porch pirates from stealing people's gifts when you were delivering them from Amazon. You made $34,000 in 4 months. That's coming up. What? Yeah. That's a classic. No, Sags, I doubt that's going to happen, and I doubt James Franklin's going to do it. Although it should not be below anybody. But yeah, I guess that's the way it works. Any job actively seeking, just have your agent call 34 people tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you cover the actively seeking, no question about it.
Do you think he'd take a job as like a bartender at a Chili's there in Happy Valley? Like, players walk in to eat, and there's your ex coach.
Give me that turkey Swiss on rye with French fries.
Can I get a margarita to go with that?
And by the way, this is a big moment in my dinner plan. Don't screw it up like you did big moment. No, I'm kidding. That's not fair. That's not. Do I think you're going to see James Franklin looks like every guy you see in an Iowa airport, though, doesn't he? You're walking through. Hey, man, where are you from? I'm from Swickley, Pennsylvania. I'm headed to the Pittsburgh area. He just kind of looks like every guy a balding guy with glasses walks to the airport. But no, Sags, he's not working at Chili's. Or serving you a Foster's lager at Outback Steakhouse. Okay. He's not doing that.
You don't know that.
And not that every guy looks like, you know, I always say this, you and I used to joke about it. Glasses, you know, that middle-aged white dude or a little older white guy, balding, walking through the airports with khaki pants on and he's got glasses on. That's you're walking through the Cleveland, the Iowa airport. You know, just that. Oh, that's that guy. I don't know. Could James Franklin fly under the radar, Sakes, in a non-college football town? Would a lot if he walked through New York City? Well, not New York. Let's say San Diego Airport. Are a lot of people know who he is?
No, no.
Yeah, exactly. Probably likes it that way too, I would imagine.
Real fast before we get out of here,
You and I are those average white guys that walk through the airport in Iowa.
Exactly.
We resemble that remark. No question about it.
I have one of my new favorite people in the world now, and that's the Pope. I'm not Catholic. I don't go to church much. But the Pope today was, you know, riding around in his automobile that he stands up in, doesn't have a top or anything, and he's riding around Vatican City. And there's video where someone yells out to him, "Go Cubs," because he's a White Sox fan, which is a whole nother story. Because remember when the Cubs tried to claim that he was
a
Cubs fan, and they had it all
dispelled quickly, right?
Yeah, and then all of a sudden there's video of him at the World Series in 05. But so anyways, today, this morning, someone yells "Go Cubs" at him, and he turns and just yells back. Nope, he just turns and yells back, "Hey, buddy, they lost." That's the Pope of the Catholic Church trolling Cubs fans.
What it really would set you on your ease, waving and say, "Ah, fuck the Cubs." Did you I got a Pope that'll cuss in public. And right when you said it, Sags, think about this.
Chicago accent.
Yeah, exactly. With the good Chicago. And you know what? Chicago's like, "Hey, man, it's okay. This way, one of us, man. It's cool." Right. Good people cuss. You know, they get passionate about stuff. I mean, you know, he's not walking on water yet, but he's pretty close to the good Lord, I would imagine, as far as knowing what's going on. A good man. I'm thinking you said he's at the 2005 World Series. Do you think he had any – think about this, Sags. I know this is weird. We can talk about it another time. But that's 20 years ago. Do you think he had any idea? You know, one day I'm going to be running the Catholic Church. No. Think about that. As a U.S. guy, which we don't see. What's it, only a couple times?
The story. I think he was still in Chicago at that time, and then it was a little bit after that is when he went to Peru.
Right.
To lead the church, the big
that
church.
Era, in there. That era, right.
Yeah.
But do you think you don't wake up thinking – you know, in 20 years, I'm going to be the Pope, man. That's going to be so awesome.
I don't know why it fascinates me so much, but like after the last Pope died and they do all that stuff where they vote and stuff, that's one of the most intriguing things.
Oh, dude.
My wife's Catholic, but like.
And they're hanging on every second of it. I understand.
I get it.
And leading your church. Yes.
Like, who's the vote? And I looked at it from a betting standpoint this past one, but this dude came out of nowhere. One guy mentioned him. He's like, "There is a guy from Chicago. I don't think he'll get it, but I know his name's being mentioned." And then it was not even like
you made a lot of money on the long shot, did that. You?
Yeah.
Damn right.
Boom. Here's this dude. From I love Chicago. It.
They lost. That's a great line by him. Lost, for him. So. I love it.
Pope don't put up with shit.
Yeah, Pope don't play.
Sox. Yeah.
And good on him. Just because he's a Pope doesn't mean he can't be that fandom. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now he can still give some prayers to the Cubs, but you know what? Harder prayers to the White Sox. Those are his team. Yeah. Oh, well. Can he
just do something about Jerry Reinsdorf for Bulls and Sox fans? Because that dude sucks.
I got to tell you right now, things, there may not be an answer to that prayer. Sorry, buddy.
Well, there is one, but I'm not going to bring it up.
There you go.
Because, like I said, I'm not a church.
Yeah, don't bring that one up because I don't want lightning to strike you, dude. Yeah, don't put that on anybody. There you go. Good stuff today, man. We appreciate everybody. Yeah.
We'll be back tomorrow. I think something we should talk about tomorrow, as long as we don't have any, because there's no big stories going on right now. And something you kind of mentioned in passing when we were talking about Indiana football and stuff is, let's each sit down tomorrow morning, and think about, let's each come up with our 10. We're only limited to 10 blue bloods in college basketball and in college football.
You mean to have the both of the same program?
No, just separate lists.
Okay, so they stand alone. 10 college blue bloods basketball.
Yeah, if you don't think there's 10 blue bloods in college football, then give me your 7 or 6 or whatever it is.
Talking about how they're described. If they're 0-3, if they've been a blue blood or 0-5, whatever, just 10 college hoops, 10 football. I'm in. So you want both of these. Both of these.
Both of them.
Yeah, both of these nuts on your forehead, too. We'll do that tomorrow. Got his ass, Triple E.
You got
him. I had to wait until we had a subject in between the Pope, so I didn't get struck by life.
Right, yeah. Wow. I'm calling
today.
The Pope.
I'm sin free today. There you go.
Yeah, I'm calling the
Sean
Pope.
Sean's already out of it. Sean got out of here. There you go. He's done.
You at home. And then we'll talk about the college basketball AP Top 25 came out, I think, yesterday. I know my Wolverines are ranked. Are your Trojans? I'll tell you right now, they're not.
We'll talk to you tomorrow, thanks. Yeah, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Hey. I will say at least they're in the others receiving votes.
Yeah, great. Category. Well, go ahead. Still take. Hey, we're not even out of a week yet to take your ass whooping, okay, on the football field. So you sit there, take that until hoops.
All right, we got to go, guys.
See you tomorrow, man.
Thanks,
good stuff.
Thanks, Triple E. Thanks, Laura. Thanks to everybody involved in the show. Keep sending your questions every single day. We'll answer them, and maybe we'll throw dumb questions at each other like we have been the last couple days and see who can rattle who. But we'll be back tomorrow. Go answer the poll question about college coaches, contracts, buyouts, or paying players. We'll talk. We'll finish that one up tomorrow and have our new poll question up. We will talk to you guys tomorrow. Peace, guys.